This segment of the Financial Sense News Hour is brought to you by Nationwide Financial. For more information about Nationwide's products and services, please visit nationwide.com. That's nationwide.com. Neither Nationwide nor any of its affiliates is related to or affiliated with Jim Poplava of Poplava Securities, Incorporated.
This is the Financial Sense News Hour with the president of PFS Group, Jim Poplava. Since 1982, PFS Group has offered asset management and educational resources that have helped investors build, maintain, and preserve their wealth. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
Well, welcome back to our Lifetime Income series, which we're doing every week here on the program, or almost every week. Every once in a while, we skip it if there are other things going on that need coverage. And as far as lifetime income now, after the elections this week, don't worry about it. You're not going to have any income that you have to worry about. Just go apply for state benefits. Thank you very much, and we'll see you next week on the show. No.
End of story.
End of story. In all seriousness right now, so far we've covered the idea over the past few weeks about having a plan. If you haven't gotten that message out of this show, you aren't listening. Have a plan, because the plan gives you that reference point. It's almost like a navigation chart or navigation instruments when sailing or flying in a storm. It gives you reference points when things are turbulent. We have turbulent markets, 0% interest rates, lots of volatility, unknowns, and that's probably going to be the future here for at least the next decade. So you do need to have that plan. Now, today, we're going to divide this planning up into several parts. First part is looking at a retirement plan. And the second is an emergency plan. So, Jim, take it away.
Well, one of the reasons, John, that I think it's very important to have a plan, and we discussed this briefly last week when there was a major study that was released, I think it was Fidelity that did it, where 70% of Americans don't have a retirement plan, 50% of Americans don't have any savings, 30% of Americans aren't contributing to 401k plans, and I think it's almost 30% of Americans age 65, at least with men, plan on working close to their 80s. So they basically aren't going to have a retirement. They haven't saved. They don't have a plan. They haven't prepared for it. And we're in a new environment today where we're seeing a lot of restraints placed on government. And the reason I want to bring this up is we are going to go next year, in the years after, we're going to go through what we call entitlement reform. Now, when any time you hear the government talk about tax reform, entitlement reform, let me tell you what that means. As we talked about in the second hour with basically the bridge to who knows where, we talked about 63% of the government's budget is on automatic pilot. That's Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, welfare, interest on the debt. So we're now down to 37%, and at the current rate of expenditures, we're going to be down to only 25% because these things are mushrooming and growing so fast, especially when you have a demographic that's going to change in this country in the next two decades, with individuals age 65 and over is going to go from 13% to almost 20% of the nation's population. We got 10,000 boomers a day turning age 65 for the next two decades. Now, in my generation, being a boomer, back in the 80s and the 90s, they changed and stretched out the retirement date, so I can't get full benefits until age 66. Let me tell you what's coming. They are going to move the retirement age, and if you're young listening to this program, it's very important. They're going to push it back to about age 69, with minimum benefits at age anywhere from 64 to 65, depending on whose plan. I've read the Simpson-Bowles plan. I've read the Paul Ryan plan. I've read the David Walker plan. All three of those plans being proposed by Republicans and Democrats, and both parties talk about pushing back the retirement age. That's coming. Either that or we're going to go bankrupt. It's that simple. So if you got a plan that says, well, I'll just wait till I'm age 66 or age 67, depending on what your age. Right now, the full retirement age is 66 and 67, depending on your birth dates. And so they're thinking of pushing that back another couple of years to age 69. So if you're saying, gee, I'm going to wait till I'm 66 to retire, if you're a young person planning for retirement, think again, because that's going to be pushed back. Number two, when it comes to Medicare, this went into effect in 2010. Depending on your income, when it comes to Medicare, your Medicare premiums could be $99 or they could be $320. And those figures are going to change going forward. Obamacare is now official. It is going to be implemented. The taxes are going to go into effect next year, and the recipients and individuals moving into the healthcare system are going to take place in 2014. That's coming. So there are major changes coming to retirement and to entitlements. So you better have some kind of plan if you're in your 40s, you're in your 50s, you're 5 years away from retirement, 10 years away from retirement. So those are things that are coming, and that's why it's important you have a plan. Secondly, we're dealing in a interest rate environment where basically the Federal Reserve and the U.S. government cannot afford to allow interest rates to rise on the short term, although I do think they're going to start rising by the time we get to next year, because I do not think the bond market is going to be complacent. Allow the Fed to print money. We're going to begin an upward climb in interest rates, and I'm going to talk about that in just a second. But we're dealing in a world today where a three-month treasury bill is less than 0.1%. A two-year treasury note is 0.25%. 5 years ago, it was 5%. So we're dealing in a different market. And if you are in a bond fund, you are going to lose a lot of money in the balance of this decade. And that's why I talked about in the first hour, when I did the fixed income report, the importance of having a laddered bond portfolio if you need income. Do not put all your money in a bond fund. You're going to see your income drop. You're going to see your principal go down when this thing starts to turn around. You've already seen, if you've been in a bond fund, is the case I discussed last week with Tom and Sufir, where they saw a dramatic drop in their income from 2002 to this year with a large portion of their portfolio.
Last week, we talked about the case of Tom and Sue, and when they started into their idea of planning, or at least investments for the purpose of retiring, he had half of what he was investing in stocks, half in bond funds. And for a long time, he could get by. But as the markets began to shift, he gradually saw his income drop. And then it really started to drop precipitously, especially when we went through the second bear market. And then he panicked at that stage. And this is where that plan comes in, because the odds of things being consistent like they were, say, 20 or 30 years ago for longer periods of time will probably not be true. But having the plan enables you to deal with these changes.
Yeah, because, I mean, if you're working right now and you're an investor saving retirement, I mean, you basically have two risks that you're dealing with. You're dealing with market loss. You know, we have a bear market, or we have inflation. Although if you're dollar cost averaging and you're saving longer term for retirement, you actually love bear markets because you're buying more shares of a mutual fund. You're in your 401k plan. And if you're dividend reinvesting, you're buying more shares in the companies that you've invested in. But when you move into retirement, you're also going to be facing three additional fears. You still have market loss. You still have inflation risk. But now you've got three more risks added to your retirement. Because of longevity and medical advances, outliving your assets, rising health care costs, and inadequate income for a surviving spouse. And what's really important is when you put together a plan, you need to take a different approach. You should have a very, very high level of confidence that the income you need for essential living expenses is going to be there for life. And you've heard us discuss over the last half year, case study after case study, about, you know, having a budget, knowing what your number is. Everybody has a number, and only you know that. And the only way you're going to know that is if you have a plan. If you put together a budget and you take a look at, what does it cost for me to live on a daily basis? What are those essential expenses? What are the things I would like to have? And what are the dreams or future expenses? And you've got to factor in rising healthcare cost and inflation down the road, because those two things are going to eat you alive if you haven't prepared for it. You may not notice it when you first retire, but I guarantee you, if you start looking at your retirement with the idea that between you and your spouse, you're probably going to be facing 20 to 25 years of your retirement years, you will begin to notice a change in your expenses after year 5, and especially after year 10, and especially in the latter part of your retirement when you're facing the long-term effects of rising inflation and long-term medical costs. So you need to have your assets be invested in income today that will be invested differently than the assets you're going to need in the future. And the financial risk you face in retirement is going to impact you differently over time, and you need to have an investment strategy that reflects that over a period of time. And you've heard us discuss case after case here on the program the difference a plan can make in solving all those issues of knowing what your number is and then coming up with a plan to deal with that number, dealing with all these uncertainties about inflation, health care, market risk. When you have a plan, you can prepare for it. But more importantly, you know, when you take a look at the steps of the plan, you gather the information and you finally know what that number is. Two, you know what your income needs are by brackets, essential living expenses, want-to-haves, future want-to-haves. Then you can develop a portfolio strategy that addresses each one of those needs. You're also going to have a high degree of probability of knowing what the success is. Then you implement the plan, you harvest the income, and you monitor it, and you change it as your needs change, your family needs change. But the most important thing is you don't find yourself in a crisis dealing with an issue you never thought would happen. Just as I discussed last week with Tom and Sue, we call them the fears, all of a sudden seeing their income drop from about $36,000 on their bond funds down to $19,000 and running into a deficit as interest rates steadily decline throughout the last decade, and especially accelerating drop in income after the financial crisis as the Fed reacted, slashed interest rates to zero, and is now promising to keep them that way to the year 2015. So once again, it's very important that you have a plan. And if you don't, find somebody you trust, develop a plan so that you don't end up reacting to a crisis in your retirement. And also, you have a better feeling of what that retirement option is going to look like. And that's what you can do when you have a plan.
And if individuals would like to contact you regarding a plan, how might they do that?
Very easy. 888-486-3939. That's 888-486-3939. And we'd be glad to talk to you about putting together a plan that will help you navigate, either if you're in retirement now, running into individual issues, or you're 5-10 years away from retirement.
Coming up next, we'll focus on a different type of plan. How do you plan for emergencies? And we'll be discussing that with a doctor who deals with emergency situations quite frequently and has written a book which contains checklists you need to have in order to do that planning as the Financial Sense News Hour continues.
Sudden that old rain is falling down, and my world is cloudy and gray. You've gone away, oh stormy, oh stormy.
Weeks before Hurricane Sandy made its approach to the east coast of the United States, we were talking about emergency preparedness. You've heard the expression boots on the ground when we talk about military operations. Today we're going to talk about scrubs on the ground, what happens when doctors go into emergency areas, and we'll discuss that with a doctor who has been on the ground in the stricken areas all of this week. He also has some books out on the subject of emergency preparedness. And Jim, you have some thoughts, by the way, on the last show that we did on this subject. And we're trying to make this easy for people out there, which is why the idea of checklists and other materials. Go ahead, Jim.
And when we did our show 2 weeks before Sandy, I mentioned two websites. One was ready.gov. And that's a site that you can go to and get some things that the government recommends. But I want to recommend another site, because on the checklist for emergency preparedness, you know better than anybody else where you live in this country or where you live in the world, the kind of disasters that you're subject to. And I want to direct you to the Red Cross. That's redcrosslv.org, or just Google Disaster Preparedness American Red Cross. Now, the reason I want to do that is they have a list of preparedness checklists depending on the kind of disasters that you could be subject to. For example, they have a special prepared list for blackouts, chemical emergencies, drought, earthquake, fires, floods, flash floods, heat waves, hurricanes, lightning, thunderstorms, mudslide, terrorism, tornadoes, tsunamis, volcanoes, wildfires, and winter storms. And so the first thing that you need to do in being prepared, because as we discussed in the big picture today, we're more likely to see more of these. What you're seeing going on in New York, you saw go on in Florida, you saw go on in New Orleans, you saw go on in Texas, we've seen go on here in California, various areas of the country. We're going to see more of these because our infrastructure is decaying and we don't have the spare capacity, both at the emergency response level. So what I don't want you to do, because we did get a lot of emails after Sandy, one lady said, I wish I could have got my husband to listen to your program, Jim. He thought you were a nut job. He no longer thinks that because we're in a crisis. And this was a woman who emailed me from New Jersey. They're without power. They're without gas. And, you know, she had listened to the show and her husband basically thought, you know, I was a nut job. Not anymore. So the first thing on the list is decide what kind of things you're subject to. And that's one of the things that you need to decide. For example, here in California, we are subject to wildfires, and we're also subject to earthquakes. And I want to explain what I've done. First of all, we were hit with a real crisis in 2004, which was our first fires. We happened to be attending a wedding in Arizona, and we were driving back on Sunday when the fires started, and we got a call from some friends of ours, and they said, you can't come back because there's fires on 8. You're not going to be able to get back into the city. If you want to come in on 15, there's fires there. And thank goodness, John, because we stopped off in a hotel in Yuma, and thank God we got a room, because more travelers, quickly those hotels filled up for travelers that were coming back into the state of California out of Arizona. And we stayed there for 3 or 4 days until we could get back in. As a result of that, and also because of brownouts that we periodically go through here in California, we've established a number of emergency plans. We got backup plan B, backup plan C, and as a result of the 2007 fires, we have backup plan D. Now, something that I have done, on the day the fires hit in 2007, we had all of our essential documents and key things in a carry-out crate that we could put in the car, our essential documents, and we went up to backup plan C. We have another home here. It's actually a condominium, and we were able to put up, gosh, I think we put up 7 animals, including 2 Rottweilers, a Doberman, a Shepherd, a couple small dogs, 3 or 4 staff members, and 2 or 3 other families. I mean, we literally felt like Noah's Ark. But I was the last one to leave our house. And one of the things that I did, John, as a result of being the last one to leave, I was caught in a traffic jam for about 3 hours. So one of the things I do is I go sailing. And in my sail bag, in the trunk of all my cars, I have water supply. I have 2 6-packs of water. I have a box of Clif protein bars. that I always carry, because when I go sailing, I don't eat lunch. I just have like a Clif bar and usually water. I have a Leatherman tool. I have a special Swiss Army knife, and I also have emergency supplies. I carry it in my car because on 2007, in October, when that fire hit, I was on the freeway for 3 hours. It was hot, and man, was I glad, John, I had water, I had a Clif bar. I mean, I literally got out of my car on the freeway because everything was at a dead standstill, opened up my trunk, got out a bottle of water and a Clif bar.
And given the environment that we're going to go into in the very near future here, Jim's going to start marketing fiscal Clif bars that keep you nourished. Well,
a new product line coming from Financial Sense. But also, in addition to that, we have water supplies at the house. And I want to tell you how you can do this for yourself and make it easy. I have a 1 year supply of freeze-dried food, enough for me, my wife, and also my children, because I'm probably not going to need a 1 year supply, but if an emergency comes, for example, we had a refinery shut down. It was 2 or 3 years ago, and we were at risk of losing 25% of the fuel supply in California, which means the trucks wouldn't be delivering groceries at the store. So, I mean, the reason we have a 1 year food supply so we can help others that are in need. Now, I want to make this easy for you. I've given you some websites that you can go to prepare your list. And I'm going to put a plug for Costco here. In full disclosure, we own the stock, but I think if you go out and buy some freeze-dried food at Costco, I'm not going to be a beneficiary. But Costco has freeze-dried food. They have a 1 year supply, which is what I did. And they have a 3 month supply. They also have what they call a kit that you can have that you can go to where they have different kind of like a carrying kit. I've got one now that I have ordered that I can keep in my car, and I'm going to keep in the cars that we own. So if I have to pack up like I did in 2007, and who knows what the disaster can be, and I can't get to emergency plan C, I've got to get out of town, I've got an emergency kit for two people that is good for 2 weeks, and I'm going to keep that in the trunk of my car. In addition to that, I have 55-gallon drums with filters on them of water, and I have basically a 3 month supply of water for my entire family. And I keep that in the garage. And you can get these at Costco. And just type in water supply, type in freeze-dried food. Costco has, it's called Self-Reliance and Expedition 72-hour. It's a four-person emergency pack. It has a pocket knife, scissors, screwdriver, nail file, 60 yards of 2-inch duct tape, multi-tool, including hammer, pliers, wire cutter, plastic drop sheets, shovel, two heavy-duty backpack, mess kit, knife, heat and shelter, light communications, four bright sticks, one hand crank, flashlight, radio, siren, first aid kit, food and water, 12 Coast Guard approved, 1,200 calorie bars, two 24-ounce filtration bottles, Coast Guard emergency water servings, sanitation. It's a kit. It goes for $239. I have ordered this kit for each one of my cars, and they also have smaller kits for food supplies. And in addition to that, Costco also have something. They're a 55-gallon barrel water storage device. It has a siphon pump, wrenches, a water solution treatment, in a filtration system, which is what we use here. The 55-gallon water supply is $729. Go to Costco, and at their website, type in emergency kit, emergency food supplies, and you can see the number of things. So if you don't want to go to a lot of expense, you just want something to know you've got it. It's there when emergency comes, whether you want it for your car, for your family. You can go there. It's easy.
And I should mention, too, by the way, in some parts of the country, they don't have Costco. Sam's Club does have the grab-and-go three-day emergency kit, two-person backpack, as well as the American Red Cross personal emergency preparedness kit. So,
and you might want to check out, in addition to the emergency checkoff list, depending on the type of emergency you're going to deal with American Red Cross, but they also have emergency assistance and kits as well. But as John mentioned, Sam's Club and Costco makes it very easy. It's got everything in a kit. I've always carried those kind of kits as a result of what I've had to go through in 2004 and 2007. Now I've added the emergency 72-hour two-person emergency pack. I'll have that for each one of our cars. The other thing I would highly recommend is Paul Williams' workbook called When All Plans Fail, Be Ready for Disasters. It's got broken down into personal and family basic readiness, Part 2, emergency communications. Part 3, home and personal emergency supplies. And Part 4, evacuation readiness, physical fitness and nutrition, home security. It's a checklist, which is what I like. You don't have to read a lot of information. It says, this is what the checklist is. This is what it covers. But do yourself a favor, because we are going to see more and more of these things. Just think back of the last decade, beginning with 9/11, Katrina and Rita, the power out in the Midwest, in the Northeast, the tornadoes, the tsunamis, now beginning with winter storms. I think I've made my point. You need to be prepared. I don't want to see an email if your area gets hit with a natural disaster, as I did from the woman in New Jersey. I wish I could have convinced my husband to listen to your show. He thought you were a nut job. He no longer thinks that. So do yourself a favor. Coming up next, my interview with Dr. Paul Williams, who is in New Jersey right now. He has spent the last 2 weeks in Staten Island, Long Island, the Bronx, and New Jersey as a medical doctor doing emergency work and helping out with first responders. Last week, New York and New Jersey were hit by a hurricane that caused a substantial amount of damage. Now, it could have been far worse had the hurricane been a strong one. What's significant about this disaster, and unlike an earthquake or tornado which strikes suddenly, the residents of New England had 3 days warning to evacuate or prepare to shelter in place. Right on schedule, everything we've been warning our listeners about emergency preparation came into play. Number one, the power goes out and doesn't come back for a long time. Number two, heat and light become immediate issues. Three, healthcare facilities become stressed, dealing with the outages and the influx of patients. Four, credit cards become unusable. Five, cash and barter now become king. Six, and it's still going on, gasoline can't be pumped because the power's out. Food clears out instantaneously from supermarket shelves and corner markets, and then it becomes scarce. Clean water and sewage becomes immediate concerns. And medicine, for those who require it on a daily basis for diabetes, hypertension, heart medication, well, they all run out. Government agencies become stressed and overwhelmed and non-functional. All things become more difficult. Food runs out, citizen anger at government and utility company rises. And in many disaster cases, this is where civil order breaks down. Fortunately, in New England, it wasn't too bad this time. There are moments of heroism and moments of shame, such as when the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers refused the help of power companies from other states because the volunteers weren't union members. And finally, citizens become disgusted, waiting for government, and decide they have to band together to help themselves. But that's where they should have started in the first place. Dr. Paul Williams is a medical doctor who was on the Washington School of Medicine faculty in St. Louis, Missouri for many years. In 1997, he founded International Healthcare Network And since then, he's flown numerous medical relief missions in Bangladesh, Indonesia, Africa, and other trouble spots of the world when disaster strikes, having seen the worst when services break down, and careless attitude Americans have to disaster preparedness. He is the author of the practical book, When All Plans Fail, Be Ready for Disasters. Now, Doctor, it's my understanding you've been, in the last week, you've been on Staten Island, Brooklyn, Coney Island. You are currently in New Jersey. Can you give us just a little bit of color of what you ran into? The things I described, is that what you saw?
Yes, very much so. In fact, the beautiful thing about it, because the silver lining there is that people have been reaching out to helping others, and the church has been rising to the occasion, and non-government organizations have been working together and networking, and I've been seeing some tremendous examples of love and outpouring of neighbor helping neighbor. But in many situations, the immediate neighbors were not able to help each other out because they were devastated, so other people had to come in. They actually set up food distribution sites in many different places, particularly in churches. They also did roadside places where they would cook hamburgers and hot dogs and chicken and serve that to the people as well. But it was bitter cold at times at night, but they would work right up through the day and into the evening, providing hot meals for people. They would have clothing. In fact, so much clothing was donated in some areas, they said, please do not bring any more donations. Water finally got to the people, but it was distressing to see that there was a lot of people who had not prepared. What you listed at the very beginning was very true. Many people did not have the water necessary to withstand the 3 to 4 or 5 days a week with no help coming to them. They didn't have food in place, and so people were having to transport water up and down many flights of stairs just to help the people out. People should have had those things in place so they were not immediately victimized by the storm.
You know, you wrote a book, When All Plans Fail, and what we've seen repeated in these weather-related disasters, whether it's Katrina, Rita, hurricanes, winter storms, is it seems like the infrastructure of the country, the things that we need to have in place, generators, backup systems, additional supplies, plus the fact that individuals themselves need to take steps to be prepared, we're seeing this kind of play out in case after case. What did you see with government? I know the president was, the first couple days, he was there trying to do what he was able to do, maybe cut some red tape. FEMA was supposed to be there. What did you see when it came to government? Did you see some red tape? Were they up to the job? Were there bottlenecks? If there were, where were they coming from and what were they?
Well, actually, FEMA was not there as quickly as what I would have expected them to be. Of course, I guess many people do not understand how FEMA actually works. The governors of the different states have to invite FEMA to come in. And I know in New Jersey, Governor Christie did invite the president to come in. FEMA has to set up, but it really was slow on the draw in terms of it said initially that it had plenty of water on hand. It turned out that wasn't true. They actually were having to put out bids to get more drinking water. And so a lot of the churches and nonprofit organizations had to come and fill in the gap ahead of time. And so the government was not terribly efficient on some of this. So I actually saw them taking credit for what nonprofits were doing as opposed to what the government itself was doing. I know people desire to do the right thing, but many times the organizational structure is kind of cumbersome and it takes a number of days because of the magnitude of the disaster. I mean, you really have to understand how huge this disaster was. You would go down mile after mile of homes that would have been without power, and people were still living inside of these homes, and they're cold, but they don't want to leave their homes because they're afraid of looting. They also don't have enough supplies, whether it's food or water in those areas, and so they have to go out and seek that during the day. Many of the cars that are out on the streets, this was particularly true in Coney Island, also certain parts of Staten Island, the cars were inundated. Literally, the water came in and the cars were totally submerged, and in the area of Coney Island, they actually had sewage that came in mixed in with the water as well. And so there's all sorts of potential diseases that are going to be cropping up later on as they go in and try to gut these homes. And some of these homes are going to actually have to be leveled. And the magnitude of this problem is something that's not going to be solved in a matter of days, weeks, months. Some of this is actually going to stretch out to several years before some people get back into a more normal life. And it's really a sad situation, the magnitude that's there. And, of course, we had that other nor'easter that came through just the last couple of days, and a lot of snow fell, and we were actually in Coney Island at the time when that snow and sleet started coming down. We actually got out just ahead of the worst part of that. But it really was cold and miserable added on top of the previous hurricane.
When you see something like this, I mean, I've seen it on the evening news last night. They showed a young family, young woman. They didn't have heat. They had their winter jackets on, and they said their young little daughter, they kept between them at night to keep her warm as they went to sleep. I saw another apartment complex where their crime had been committed, and I guess they had gas, but they didn't have electricity. So one woman had turned on her oven and had the oven door open to heat the house, which I think is kind of dangerous.
Very dangerous.
Yeah, and you think of, and of course we saw some of those fires that broke out during this storm as well. I want to ask a question when it comes to this, because something that has always surprised me, it's amazing you don't think of these things. And in fact, 2 weeks before Sandy hit, we did a show on emergency preparedness. And the amazing thing is you don't think of these things before a disaster, and then all of a sudden it hits. And in this case, it's my understanding that the weather people were telling the residents, this storm is coming, and it's highly likely it's going to hit us. So there was like a 2 or 3 day warning. Why do you think, doctor, that more people do not take steps to prepare for something? Is it just maybe wishful thinking, thinking maybe we'll dodge a bullet that'll move in another direction? What do you think this happens?
Well, sometimes they look at their past experience and say, well, we got through it last time. It wasn't all that bad. But they weren't heeding the warning and saying, this is going to be worse than what was there before. And it turns out this particular storm, Sandy, was much worse than the previous one. And I think they just sort of think, well, somehow we're going to ride this thing out. And it turns out they were not able to do so. In fact, some homes were hit so hard they literally removed off their foundations. In fact, the gas lines were broken in some of these homes. Therefore, the gas company had to shut gas off to those areas. So there were whole areas of Staten Island that not only have no electricity, but they have no gas, because it would become very dangerous if they turned it back on, and the explosions, the fires that could result from that. And in fact, this has really disturbed me as I have looked around and been speaking in different places trying to get people ready, that I've found that maybe only 5% are ready. And let me tell you another thing that I've found. Even people who are trained as first responders, the police, the EMTs, the rescue squads, and I've spoken at some conferences where there were quite a few of them in the audience, and I said, those of you that are first responders, how many of you have actually prepared for your own family? And I found out that amazingly, that probably only maybe 10 or 15% of first responders themselves are prepared, because they always look at themselves as being the ones to respond. But there have been many times where I've seen the first responders' own homes and properties and places of work have been destroyed, and they haven't been able to respond. They were the ones in need, and they haven't really prepared for themselves and their own families. And so people somehow think, well, it's going to be the other guy. I can somehow weather this. I can get through it. I've had it happen before. It wasn't too bad. But the people really do need to heed these warnings. And can you imagine that if a person just had taken 1 gallon of water per person within the household and stored that, that 1 gallon will handle the drinking water needs of a person for 2 days. So if you actually had like 3 gallons of water, you'd have 6 days of water per person in your home. That's not a lot of storage. And yet that would make the difference between being extremely anxious and worried. And also, one of the things that I have been telling people, did you know that if you had water in your water heater, that you actually have 40 to 50 gallons of water that you could actually drink? What you need to do in those situations is you need to shut off the water main so you don't have contaminated water coming in from outside, and you begin to drain the water heater. And I actually have a filter that will fit with on this that they can use and drain the water out of it, and they can filter that water, and it'll make it taste good, get the metallic taste out. And they actually have 40 to 50 gallons in their water heater that would allow them for one person. It would give them 80 to 100 days worth of water for one person. But for a family, they divide that by four, perhaps, and you'd see the number of days of water that you have in your own home and not have to worry about somebody coming in and supplying you.
We have seen, certainly with the changes in the weather cycle over the last decade or so, Doctor, we have seen disaster after disaster. I don't care whether it was the terrorist-related events of 9/11, Hurricanes Katrina and Rita, and we've seen plenty in between. We've seen tornadoes a couple of years ago, and I think it was in the mid-decade. We had a heat wave where the power went out in 7 states with the utilities for almost a week. And then you add what we've just gone through recently here in New York. We've seen this over the last decade. It's not like, okay, this is, they say the 100-year storm. Well, we seem to be seeing the 100-year storms almost every year. There's a disaster somewhere, whether it's Fukushima, whether it's a tsunami. Why do you think people are resistant to the idea of emergency preparedness now that we've seen all of these events from Katrina and Sandy, and we've seen in every one the government can't solve the emergency problem?
Right, and particularly when the emergencies are of the magnitude of a Sandy or of a Katrina, it overwhelms the system no matter who it is that's trying to provide the care. And people are actually saying, be aware that like the New Madrid Fault going down the middle of the United States or the Mississippi, the government has actually done 2 exercises over the last few years to prepare should that go off. It's actually due to go off. About every 200 years, the New Madrid Fault goes off, and the last time it did, it actually caused the Mississippi River to flow backwards and form, what is it, Lake Bigfoot near Memphis. At that time, back around 1812, about every 200 years, there's a major fault. So they're expecting that to go off, and if that should happen, bridges across the Mississippi would be down. A lot of the gas lines, trucking, bringing food from the west over into the east would be broken down. It would be terribly disruptive. And, of course, the San Andreas Fault, the Cascadia Fault off the northwest coast. There's also even some people that are saying there might be even something that would go off with Yellowstone, with the volcanic activity. They even had to have people change the places where they could go in Yellowstone because the ground was getting hotter in certain areas. There's a lot of uncertainties. I mean, I've been over in Indonesia where the volcanic activity has been very strong, and then they had the tsunami over there in Banda Aceh where a couple 100,000 people were killed. We're seeing things over and over again around the world, but they're also coming more often here in the United States, whether it's wildfires, whether it's flooding, whether it's excessive cold, excessive heat. They're telling us to be aware of the solar flares, and, of course, people are even considering the EMP, the electromagnetic pulse, that could occur. And I just saw in the news recently where our own government is doing some experimentation on how to create that particular weapon, because it really becomes a weapon in a warfare situation where you knock out the electronics of your enemies. But people could do that to us as well. And people just need to be ready. And I know my wife and I have had about 4 or 5 times where heat has gone out of our home in North Carolina. And we've actually installed a wood-burning stove, and now we could actually handle any loss of electricity and wouldn't have to move out of our home. We actually now have a generator that's available, and we got one that's actually a battery-operated. It's not really requiring fuel. There's a lot of different things that people can do to just make themselves ready, and I think they really need to do that. And I say, you know, water, food, and money. In small bills, I tell people have small bills at home because, you know, when the ATMs don't work, when the cash registers don't work at the stores, you're going to have to pay cash for different things. You don't want to have 20s and 50s and 100s to be able to pay for things that maybe only be $5 because people aren't going to be able to give you change. So you've got to have small bills, and you also need to be able to evacuate. Stop and think about the people there on that had, what is about 100 homes or more that were burned down after Sandy because of the electrical fires. They would have had to have left their homes immediately. If they didn't have grab-and-go bags in their cars or something they could take from their homes and evacuate immediately, they actually would have escaped basically with the clothes on their back. And so you need to be prepared, and this is something that is happening on a greater scale. Increase frequency, increase severity, and people do need to get ready. That's the message, but unfortunately, most people still are not heeding it.
Doctor, you've written a book and also a workbook that accompanies it. Is this the sort of culmination of what you've seen doing relief work around the globe?
Yes. Well, I've been in 105 nations over the last 30 years. And been involved with a lot of major disasters. I mean, some to where several 100,000 people died, like in Banda Aceh, or 150,000 over in Bangladesh. And so I've been to places. I was actually involved with the Rwandan Hutu crisis, where the Hutus and the Tutsis had been fighting, and those types of disasters there. But I actually have, over the last 4 years, 3 to 4 years, have really felt we're seeing more disasters or have the potential for disasters here in the U.S., and that's why I wrote the book, When All Plans Fail. And it's based on a non-fear motive. In fact, the thing that I say in my book is this: be prepared for your horses, and then you'll be more likely to be ready for your zebras. And that comes out of the fact that when I went to Washington University, by the way, the university I was on faculty, I was the University of South Florida down in Tampa. I went to school at Washington University in St. Louis, but I was on faculty down at USF. But when we were being taught how to examine patients, and we were told, what are the more common diseases that produce the symptoms that you see that your patient has? He said the common things are your horses. Like when you hear hoofbeats behind you, do you think of zebras or horses? The answer, of course, here in the United States is horses. He said, think of the common things. And that's really what I tell people in the book, When All Plans Fail. Prepare for your common things, your fires, your tornadoes, your flooding, the cold, the heat, the hurricanes. Prepare for the things that you can expect in your local area, and if you're ready for those disasters, then if more unusual things happen, such as terrorism or other acts of man-made disasters, you'll be ready to respond to those as well. So get ready for your horses, and you'll be more likely to take care of your zebra.
You know, one of the things that I like that you did in your workbook is when a disaster strikes or it catches you by surprise, as a tornado can, or an earthquake, or in the case of California, where I live, we were caught with a fire. I was woken at 4 a.m, going to bed, not realizing the city was ablaze. You put checklists together, which I like, because when things hit, if you haven't been prepared, what a checklist does is it gets you to focus on, these are the things you need to look at. These are the things you need to have in place. You know, for example, a disaster planning schedule, or just even, you know, emergency contact list, family health quick reference information for emergency calls. And then also, I think something very smart is looking at where you live, what kind of disasters are you susceptible to? Obviously, if you live along the Gulf Coast or the East Coast, you know you have hurricanes. If you live up in the Northeast Coast, you know you have nor'easters and these winter storms. If you live in California, we know we have earthquakes, although fires become a new thing. And then lately, last year, we lost power to the city as a power station between San Diego and Arizona went out, cutting power to the city for 8 hours. That was a surprise. But can you go through some real simple example of some mitigation steps to take and talk about some of the key things in your workbook? Because what I like about it, it's simple. It's a checklist. Okay, I've got that, I've got that, I've got that. And so you don't have to think, what goes into a list? What are the things? Let's talk about that for a moment, because I think this is really important.
Right. Well, you see, the thing is, that's exactly right. If you do your list before disaster happens, you will then be ready. If you try to pull things together when the disaster actually is hitting you, you will not be able to think straight. You won't be able to take care of the problems as you need to. It's going to really be tough for you to handle those situations. And so you do need to take care of it ahead of time. And so grab and go bag at home, at work, in your car, so because you don't know where you're going to be when a disaster strikes. And some people get overwhelmed when they look at the full list of what they could get. So I actually have something I call the bare bones emergency kit. And in that, I have different things like, you know, having water filters, things that you can filter your water. So if you end up not having the jugs of water or other water source around you, to where you could actually take lake water, river water, pond water, even pool water, and to be able to filter it and take out the things that are bad for you. Also, we have tablets or liquid that would treat the water as well, that we recommend that people would have that. They also would have a multi-tool, these little, like a Leatherman tool, something that would have like a hammer, a saw, screwdrivers, pliers, knives, all in one little tool that you can grab, so you don't have to carry all those things with you. You could have those type of multi-tools and a rope, small, strong rope. And I tell people, make sure that you have shoes that are going to be sturdy, that can handle on rough terrain. For instance, one of the things that happened after 9-1-1, it was both sad and funny in some ways, in that the women, as they came out of the building, they were discarding their high-heeled shoes and running barefooted because they were at work, wearing their high-heeled shoes, but they didn't have anything to put on in terms of practical shoes to help them get out of the disaster area. Gloves would be another thing that I would put in that bare-bones kit. A flashlight also would be there. Some money, a small amount of money, so that you could at least have some of your immediate needs met, and some energy bars, something that would allow you to have at least some food for the first few hours or maybe 2-3 days after a disaster would strike if you had to leave home. Those are just some of the practical things, but there's full list within the book and the workbook for the more extensive things that you would need. And again, I would like to go back and emphasize the major things. One is take care of your water needs. That's number one. You can only live 3 to 5 days without water. You need to have safe, pure water. So keeping your water pure and clean is number one. Second one would be to have some food available, and the other one would be to have small bills that you could use. So if you had to leave and evacuate from your home and try to get out and into other outlying areas. And another thing I should tell people is medications. That's really a big deal, particularly for people who are on medications that are critical for their life. I'm telling them, have at least 3 months' supply of medications, even if you have to pay for it yourself and the insurance doesn't cover it, have 3 months' worth, and also divide it up between your grab-and-go bags that in your car or at work, as well as having it at home, because you don't know where you're going to be. And another thing that I tell people, if they really have very critical medicines, get your physician to write a prescription for those medications and keep that with you at all times, because if for some reason you can't get home or you don't have your medications with you, you can then go to another town and get that prescription filled. And just remember that for controlled substances, you need that prescription updated every 6 months. And for non-controlled substances, about every year, you need to have that with you. But if you had those prescriptions in your purse or in your billfold, you would be able to go to another town and get those medications at another site and provide those very needed medications.
Doctor, could you give out your website? Because one of the things that I have liked about what I've seen in your book and workbook, and especially your workbook, because sometimes, first of all, people don't like to think about this emergency prepared list. I mean, it's not the kind of thing that if you're getting together with friends over the weekend or sitting around the family dinner table in the evening, hey, let's talk about our emergency preparedness kit.
Yes, the website is www.whenallplansfail.com. And on there, of course, I have the book and the workbook, and it's also available both at Amazon and Nook as well, if you wanted to get the electronic format. Now, that's only for the book. The workbook is not electronically available. You'd have to purchase that directly. But also, we do have some emergency supplies also on the website as well. And people do really need to get ready. That's www.whenallplansfail.com, and gives a little bit of my own background and history there as well. But I really urge people to get ready. These books are written in a way that it's not a fearful approach. It's also not the survivalist approach where it's going to tell you how to go out and eat off the land and, you know, that type of thing. It's not that. It's the very practical things trying to get you ready for your horses, your common disasters, where you live in a practical way. And so if you're ready for those common things where you live, you'll be then more ready for the uncommon things when they show up.
Well, what I like about your approach, you're not talking about, you know, find yourself a bunker, get a can of beans and a shotgun. You're talking about stuff that, you know, you're dealing with right now, having been on Staten Island, Brooklyn, and Coney Island, now in New Jersey. Doctor, I want to thank you for joining us on the Financial Sense News Hour. Thank goodness there are people like you out there doing good work and trying to help those that are in need when these emergencies strike. And I think your book, I just applaud you for writing the book. It's one of the best that I've seen. And for anybody listening to this program, do yourself a favor. Go to the doctor's website. Either get the workbook if you want something straightforward, easy to follow, organized in a very simple way, tells you this is what you need to do step by step. This is it. When all plans fail.com. We've been speaking with Dr. Paul Williams. Doctor, thanks so much, and keep up the great humanitarian work that you're doing.
Well, thank you for giving the opportunity to get the message out.
You know, this week, Jim, it was really interesting after the election. Election night, I didn't even turn on the returns. I watched a couple of movies. I figured we'll find out everything the next morning. But then I found all of my conservative and some of my libertarian friends, they're all moping. You know, mope, mope, mope. Oh, it's so bad. This is awful. I said, it isn't bad. It's just getting exciting now. I think the next 2 months are going to be really exciting, not to mention the next 48 months during this administration. And, of course, we'll have a couple of congressional changeovers during that time with the 2014 and then 2016 elections. Nice time to be in radio, but it is getting exciting, and you have to be shrewd and wise.
You know, it was interesting, too. Like you, John, we found out the returns at the national level pretty early. I followed the discussion afterwards, which surprised a lot of people in terms of the outcome, especially some of the pundits and the pollsters. But some of those polls were dead on. And once I saw the conciliation speeches, I turned over to California News. And when I went to bed, it was really strange because waking up the next day, the tax measures were being defeated at the time I went to bed. So most of that stuff, the awful outcomes that happened here in California, you wake up the next morning. And, you know, one of the issues we had talked about in the big picture is a good friend of mine who basically has said, you know, that was it. That was the last straw, a bridge too far. And he is now making plans to move his business up to the Lake Tahoe area. That was it. But there's certainly going to be no shortage of things to talk about. And especially now as we move from one crisis, which was the election, that's now behind us. And now we can focus our attention on the next crisis, which is the fiscal cliff. And if they take us over the cliff, it will become a real full-blown crisis. If they resolve it and they do it favorably, it will become a catalyst. Before we close here, I just really have a strong, strong sense that I really want to urge you to listen, re-listen to that emergency preparedness that we did in this last hour here. Take some steps. Do yourself a favor. It doesn't take a lot of effort. Go to the Red Cross site. Take a look at what area or what kind of disasters where you live you're exposed to. If you want to just do it easy, go to Sam's Club, go to Costco. At least get yourself a preparedness kit. Have a checklist. Go to the Red Cross if you don't want to buy Paul Williams' workbook, which I think is one of the best I've seen put together. Do yourself a favor. Please do this. I don't want to hear any emails after we're doing this show that another disaster happens. And I could get emails, gosh, we wish we would have listened. Or my spouse, I wish I would have listened and convinced them. So don't find yourself unprepared. Well, that's about it for this week's show. On behalf of John Loeffler and myself, we'd like to thank you for joining us here on the Financial Sense News Hour. Until you and I talk again, we hope you have a pleasant weekend.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSN. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.
This segment of the Financial Sense News Hour is brought to you by Nationwide Financial. For more information about Nationwide's products and services, please visit nationwide.com. That's nationwide.com. Neither Nationwide nor any of its affiliates is related to or affiliated with Jim Poplava of Poplava Securities, Incorporated.